Hello, I'm Bonnie Burkert, and this is Truth Be Told, Transformation, sharing tools for transformation to live your highest life. So what tool are we going to talk about today? Well, for me, it's all about yoga. And a lot of times for people, when I say yoga, perhaps you think I'm rolling out a yoga mat and getting into a down dog, my least favorite pose. But no, I've invited a gentleman here to talk to us about how yoga is far more than just being on that mat. So welcome, hey. International yogi, Mark Whitwell.
Well, international yogini, Bonnie.
Namaste, Mark. I've had the true pleasure of practicing with you at Bhakti Fest and Shakti Fest in Joshua Tree, California.
Awesome.
Those were some beautiful times there. And again, just for anybody that doesn't necessarily know the word bhakti, it's about devotion. And so I really want to talk to you about the title of the show. I don't know if you knew I called our conversation Yoga, Unique Whole Body Prayer to Life.
Wow, thank you.
Right? So I think that's something that I found in your writings on your really robust website.
Hey, you stole my words.
I did steal your words, but I want to make that our conversation, Mark, because I think that this is a really beautiful way of looking at yoga, and I want to invite people to explore it in a much broader sense.
Right. Well, I'd like to start off saying is that anybody can do yoga, anybody. You know, whatever your age, your health, your cultural background, your body type, you know, there is a right yoga for every person, no matter who the person is. And if it is yoga, it is whole body prayer to life, to reality. You know, and those who have a religious language or frame, and they perhaps might use the word God, you know, or, you know, whatever the word is, all-pervading power of the cosmos, this yoga is direct intimacy with that, direct participation with what our life actually is, and anybody can do it. There is a perception due to the sort of modernization of yoga for yoga to be difficult, some exaggeration, some gymnastics that you do, you know, some struggle, and this is not the case at all. Yeah, this is not how it is.
Well, no, that's great. And because I feel that that's welcoming, and that's really what I'd like to do with my interview series is to make these more simple and inviting for people to explore in a lot of different ways. Now, right. I was doing my homework on you before our conversation here, and I saw a great video on YouTube, and you gave such a wonderful intro talk prior to teaching a class at one of the festivals, at the Shakti Fest. And right. I think that I just wanted to remind people that the yoga, meaning union, right, can be also the sort of a transcendent thought that you were sharing with people and some of the messages that I was hearing from you. So one of the quotes I had from that talk, I think I got this one right, is yoga is the journey. No, it says here, the journey and the goal are the same.
Right. In other words, you see, obviously, there is a great power that is the cosmos, that is the earth, that is life on earth. And we are that power. That's how it is, you know. So yoga, if it's correctly done, is each person's direct participation with that is the power of the cosmos. And at this point in the human situation that we're in, it's insane to ignore that. You know, you could say that humanity has been ignoring it, ignoring that there is a great power that is our life, that is reality itself.
Mark, I'm going to interrupt you really quickly and ask you to help us feel what that power is. Maybe you'd like to give an example. I would say the example would start with breath.
Right.
Correct?
Well, that's why I say there's a right yoga for every person, no matter who the person is. And, you know, like a simple movement of the whole body with the breath gives a sense of that power It is so healthy for the body and the mind to have a sense or a participation or to feel the power that is the cosmos, that is our actual reality. Our actual reality, you know? And it's no accident that the word in Latin, way back, for breath, is spiritus, spirit. The word spirit is the word for breath. And this is deeply in our wisdom traditions, in our religious traditions, not just in the world of Latin, of Rome, but in the world of Hebrew and Greek and Sanskrit in India. It's a facility that everybody has access to and anybody can do.
You gave the example of how connecting with the breath and the awareness of our vitality within our beings can show up in other places, such as even if you're taking a rigorous walk, right? So you're feeling it and you're connecting. So I think that's part of it. I think there's a suggestion of the physicality that goes with yoga and can help us probably open us up that much more to a deeper breath.
Little practice that we do on a daily basis has profound implication for everything else we do in life on a daily basis. You know, if you do your 10, 15 minutes of breathing, you know, and then go for a walk, you'll find there'll be a very different quality to that walk, to be in nature, to be nature walking in nature, you know, to be the beauty of the cosmos walking in the beauty of the cosmos, right?
Yes.
It'll be profoundly different.
Presence, certainly, right? So I would feel that's probably what we're working with is that presence, very much so. So let's talk about the aspect that when, you know, we put this in the title, the prayer to life. So there's a reverence there that I'd like to ask you about, and maybe tell us a little bit about your journey and how you found that. Because I think that in your bio, you sort of state how you really had a breakthrough with your physical practice when you, I think, found a spiritual teacher to help guide this to greater depths.
Yeah, it's true that there, you know, from the yoga philosophy, the yoga perspective, there must be an intervention of a teacher to help us with the very ingrained patterning that's in the body and in the mind, you know. And we meet a teacher, and that is simply no more than a friend, no less than a friend, not an authority, not senior, not a know-it-all, you know, not even a knower, just someone who shares and who cares for us, you know. And so that intervention must be there to break the automatic patterning that is in life, you know, that we've the social sort of negativity that we've inherited from the societies that we were born into that just tend to go on and on and on. So along comes a teacher that you trust, no more than a friend, no less than a friend. And the quality of trust is there. It's called Shraddha. And in that, you know, that faithfulness, then the yoga practice is developed in the relationship itself. And of course, the relationship is really the point, you know, to meet somebody that you feel that you can trust and be cared for in a mutual exchange with somebody. This is, you know, profoundly in our wisdom cultures of all over this earth, that relationship is there. So that is what yoga is, to have that relationship. And there isn't any doubt that, you know, the entire, you know, thank you for using the word bhakti and whole body prayer, is that the entire wisdom tradition all over the earth, no matter where it comes from, no matter what the time frame is, there was this sense of devotion to life itself, the caring of each other and the relationship with one's teacher.
So take me back to your early days, to some of your early teachers.
Right. Well, you know, I know that you were involved in the the early developments of the music industry that made such profound changes in this world, Bonnie. And I just remember being a young guy in the suburbs, you know, thinking like, hey, this is not enough. There's got to be more than this. They're just preparing me for the factories, you know, or the universities, you know, to do my bit for society. And it wasn't enough. And then the Beatles went off to India. And then that was that. I was very curious about what they were doing, you know, what's up here. So off I went to India and wandered around for...
You were in New Zealand, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So not at quite as far as from England. So there's I feel like there's a nice connection between Australia and Asia in that way.
It was kind of, New Zealand. There you flew to New Zealand to either Malaysia or Singapore and then a little hop over to Madras. Or Chennai, as it's known
Incredible.
Now.
Incredible.
And I wandered all over India and had all kinds of experiences. And then finally coming back to Madras, to the ashram, or near Madras, it's a city called Tiruvannamalai. It's the home, the ashram of Ramana Maharishi. And there I heard about these yoga teachers. That was Krishnamacharya and his son Desikachar. And I went there and... To meet them and start studying with them, it helped me like understand what the hell was going on in India in terms of religion and spirituality, because there's a lot of charlatans,
yeah.
You know, all over this world. And you know, the spiritual business is business, frankly. And it's hard as a Western mind to work out what's actually going on. And I felt very fortunate to meet these real scholars of yoga and real practitioners of yoga. And as soon as I recognized who they were and what they were offering, I got down to it and studied. And it, as I said, it helped me make sense of the whole deal of what the wisdom cultures are that have flourished for thousands of years.
Incredible. So what an education. And so you, at that point, you were on the path and you've never strayed.
Yeah. Well, it was an education. And, you know, and I come from a line of school teachers and, you know, professors and so forth. But as a young guy, I wasn't interested in, you know, it was boring to me. And I think I took, you know, my mother used to say, you could have been a doctor or a lawyer. But I was interested in, you know, the Beatles were in Rishikesh, for God's sake, you know. And who was this Mahesh Yogi? And what was that? Why was John Lennon and George Harrison in particular, why were they interested in this matter?
Yeah.
So they opened the doors to the Western mind for that curiosity, you see. And I love that you were involved in that business and you broke through a lot of, you know, major acts like Metallica, my God, you know, into the public mind. And these people, you know, especially the Beatles, of course, they did a huge work for bringing even the idea of spiritual realization to the Western mind. You know, Europe was going through dreadful wars, you know, dark, dark times, World War One and Two. And at that time, there were people, you know, like Ananda Mayma, the woman sage, you know, Ramana, who I mentioned, Neem Karoli Baba, the guru of Ramdas, Baba Ramdas, you know, and Nityananda, Bhagavan Nityananda, and Shirdi Sai Baba, and on and on, you know, a lot of, you know, known and unknown people who were in the most sublime state that a human being can be in, you know. And they were there while Europe raged on in its power structures and its terrible situation.
Yeah.
And yet those world wars gave us the freedom, gave us democracies in the US and the Western democracies to go to India and make that study. You know, I'm so admiring of people like Richard Alpert Ramdas, you know, who went there and basically were the pioneers of gathering this information for the first time for the first time, and bringing it back into the West. And it, yeah, it's a project to bring this knowledge. You said, you know, yogis are the new rock stars. Well, sounds a bit glib, but I like that statement. You know, the music industry didn't quite do it for us. It opened the door.
I mean, it's interesting because I did have a conversation on another talk, and it wasn't yoga related, but it was definitely in terms of higher consciousness and how a lot of music, it started in the late 60s, right, the psychedelic era, and then into the 70s. Yeah. And there were some very interesting higher concepts that I think opened our minds. I mean, even like a band like Rush, for example, I don't know if you ever knew them, but absolutely. Closer to the Heart. I mean, you ever listen to those lyrics? I mean,
they are heart opening. And, yeah. You know, the truth got spoken, or the truth got sung in spiritual poetry that came on the wings of rock music. I thank God for Elvis Presley for bringing black music into a white audience. And John Lennon heard that and said, my God, that's what I want to do. I want to be like that. And there's this earnest attention. And they came out of the bitter struggles of the society as it was at that time. And they knew there was something more. And they would feel it in their music. And they would write the poetry of their feelings. And this informed the whole world of something quite different from what was the, you know, common mind that's been going on for hundreds of years, you know, miserable power structures and control of the people. And so something woke up in the early 60s and onward. You know, Elvis got going in 1963, big time, you know. And then on it went. And anyway, so we were informed of that. I was certainly informed in my life of something utterly beautiful beyond what the society was dishing up to me as a young person, you know. But now I feel now we need the practical means for each person to actually do this, you know, to actualize the beautiful ideas that's in spiritual poetry, that's in sacred text. Yeah.
So this is great, by the way. I mean, this is really big, and you're I love it when I have a conversation and it takes me to a whole nother level of understanding and awareness. So thank you for that, kind of talking about music and how that was an opener, right? For a certain generation. And I mean, I'm going to say that I think that yoga, and we're talking the physical practice of yoga.
Yeah.
I think that's also it's taking it to another step, because I think in that way, I know we're talking about how yoga doesn't have to be about the physical practice, but say that it is, if nothing else, just the breath. But getting down on the mat, even if you're just doing a savasana, to be that. To lie in that corpse pose and be that vulnerable that you can just lie on your back and fully release. It's not that easy. Yeah. I mean, you couldn't do that just anywhere. And I think, but in a yoga class after practice, you can get there. So I think an instructor like you that invites people into physical practice, that's another level of transcendence right there as well, that I'm of transformation, that I think has been really exciting, even though I'm with you that I don't like to see the commoditization of yoga, and it's gotten super pop. It's, you know, it's a little overwhelming. They have black yoga. Have you heard of that? Speaking of Metallica. Yeah, you can go and practice yoga to like hard rock music.
Oh, fair enough. Why not?
And I could be judgmental about that, but hey, as long as people are in it, they're breathing, they're stretching, they're moving differently than they did in perhaps any regular gym class. I don't know that much about what they're teaching in gym, but I don't think they're teaching enough yoga. And I like that. I like that sensuality and the stretch even, and the relaxation that we can get from that. So maybe that's the next wave, right? We've gotten people into their heart and into their breath. So maybe now helping people actually move can get us into a different form of awareness, relaxation, awareness, presence.
I would say the next wave is each person's own personal practice that you conveniently do in your own house, in your own home. This is where it's got to go. And that you do your yoga, not somebody else's yoga. And, you know, the industry is nice. It's brought attention to yoga, but it tends to be you're doing somebody else's yoga. You see, you're doing somebody else's patterns. And when you learn the breath, and especially the union of the inhale with the exhale, of your whole body strength that is utterly receptive, you see, inhale, exhale, then something happens. And it's really easy to do. You know, I go back to that statement, there's a right yoga for every person, no matter who the person is, that is their direct embrace of reality itself. Whole body prayer to life, what life actually is. And anybody can do this. So this was the work of Krishnamacharya, is bringing those principles through from the wisdom traditions. You know, they flourished for 1,000 years, from the 5th to the 14th century. And it was each person's, you know, it was the practical way. The practical means that you could actualize the beautiful ideas in sacred text. You know, the utterance of spiritual realizers that got written into sacred texts, like the Bible, like the Quran, you know, like the Torah and so forth. But yoga has always been the practical means by which you can enjoy that beautiful poetry of of wisdom culture.
To embody it.
Embody it. And by the way, be it because we are it.
Well,
everybody is the power of the cosmos, you see.
Yes.
Yes. And you know, these beautiful, beautiful people like, you know, Jim Morrison, you know, who died tragically and too soon, Jimi Hendrix, who died tragically and too soon, Janis Joplin, same, you know, Kurt Cobain, soon, you know, too soon, Prince, too soon, Michael Jackson, too soon, John Coltrane, too soon, Miles Davis, too soon, you know, and I think, I just feel if they'd had a education early in their life of how to move and breathe, and not have to take stimulants from alcohol to everything else to feel okay. You know, this would make a, and I say this is the new wave. This is what the world needs now for even to survive, you know, for humanity to come through this situation that we're in, is each person's daily whole body prayer or whole body participation in reality, life, as it actually is, which is obviously a great power. Reality, our own life, our own body. Who could make a human body? Like, what is that? What is the breath, you see?
Sure.
And it's anybody can do this. You don't have to have any skill whatsoever. It's, you know, totally egalitarian. And this is what I feel we need to bring through into our earth, even to for us to survive. So that's my statement.
Here's another quote. That's fabulous. No, I love that, and it brings so much forth for me. I want to see if I can get a quote from you. Breathe more than you want to. Breathe in. Go ahead, say it more for me, Mark. You know where I'm going with
No,
this.
You got it.
Okay.
Love you.
Inhale more than you want to and exhale more than you can.
Yeah, more than you, something like that. Yeah, it's a good statement, including the pause after inhale and the pause after exhale.
Yes.
You know, inhale and pause. A little more than you had intended to. Exhale and pause. A little more than you had intended to. And something, not such a long pause that then the breath gasps. Mm-hmm. You know, you keep an even flow of inhale with exhale. And you see what asana is, posture, is you're using the whole body anatomy, the strength of the anatomy, to engage the breath and to therefore empower the breath, enhance it, participate in the breath as the whole body, make the inhale and the exhale longer, see? And then there's this beautiful thing where you pause after inhale, pause after exhale in the four parts of the breath. This is very powerful. as I said, it was deep in the traditions of wisdom culture for 1,000 years, very much so. And then it got lost, and you know, India got corrupted by, you know, male orthodox power structures and using spiritual wisdom as an authority in public control. You see, that's what happened. And these wisdom cultures where there was no hierarchy, you know, there was no control on the public, but just, you know, it was a sincere life, a culture of empowering each and every person to be in their life as what life as the power of the cosmos. It is the actual factual case. It's a fact. You are the power of the cosmos. Everybody listening to this, it's an actual fact. They are the power of the cosmos. You know, the body is that. The breath is that. Life is that. Sex is that. You know, this beauty that is reality itself is everybody's already situation, already the case. See, yoga meaning union, it's a good word, but I just want to point out the union has already happened.
Ah.
You know, life is a unity. That's what life is.
Hmm. Yeah. Mark, let's mention your book, Heart of Yoga.
Right.
And it's also a podcast now, too.
Right. Right. Well, the book that you're showing, thank you, this is my teacher's book. Desikachar, who is the son of Krishnamacharya, and you can see their photos there, The Heart of Yoga. And I did that book. It came out in 1995 for a lovely publisher out at in Vermont, Inner Traditions. And he, Ehud Sperling, the publisher, actually came and met Desikachar. I said, hey, you've got to do this book. And I said to Desikachar in about 1991 or something, you know, like, the public don't have access to your father's teaching. And, you know, Krishnamacharya, who was the teacher of Iyengar and Pattabhi Joyce, who made yoga famous all over the Western world, but they were missing out on the actual principles of individualized personal practice. So Desikachar said, well, please, if you can do something about this. And I said, well, there must be a book as a starting point.
Yeah.
You know, how to adapt yoga to the individual needs of every person, no matter who the person is, as well as the culture of each person. You know, if somebody's a Christian, this whole body prayer to life in the framework of their religious tradition is very important to have yoga. Or Buddhist or Hindu or Jewish or, you know, the list is long. Atheist. Atheists need yoga to feel better.
Right.
So we got this. We got the book out, and that's essentially a summary of Krishnamacharya's teaching. And what I say is that these principles need to be included in all the yoga that's been popularized in the yoga industry in the last 2 or 3 decades. And it's very helpful to everybody, whether you've done yoga before, or you have a background in yoga, put these principles that the teacher of the teacher actually gathered from the pre-14th century wisdom traditions, and bring them through into your yoga, and something happens there that changes it to, as I said, this direct participation in what the cosmos actually is, and the truth that is always already there, already the case, everybody's situation. And it's not a struggle to get there. It's not a search. It's not seeking for something that you imagine that you don't have, because you do have it. It's more of a yielding to what is actually the case, a yielding to life as it actually is, not seeking. I think that's a very important understanding to have. Not seeking, not spiritual seeking, but spiritual participation, yielding into what life actually is.
I mean, Mark, if people could learn that, how much more happiness would there be? I mean, it's interesting because we're taught in, I'm going to say, especially in the U.S., we're supposed to be striving. And... Yeah. I feel like what you're describing almost, you know, in that sort of an understanding of it is what it is, basically, you know, being yielding, right? That word almost aligns with being content with what is. And yet that is very contrary to what we're told. We are taught that we're supposed to always be striving for bigger, better, broader. But that creates an immense amount of stress. And I really feel that you have invited us to contemplate a very, very important way of living.
Yeah, and the Krishnamacharya, thank you for mentioning that. It was, and his son, and many others, it's been their mission, you know, like not a like a religious mission obsessiveness. It's more like just a sensible mission to get this information into the world, to get it into the hands of every individual everywhere, you know. And so this is, you know, why we, you know, at our, we're called the heart of yoga, you know, why we work so hard to get it out into the world. And, you know, like everything else, it must be adapted to each individual, including the culture of each person. And we do, we know this to be what's needed to save this world. Because as we've seen, the striving hasn't worked. The striving creates overproduction and, you know, climate chaos, raping the resources of the planet, you know. It hasn't worked. And religious striving hasn't worked because that dissociates humanity from our actual condition. You know, the seeking for some sort of God as other, some higher power somewhere else, that hasn't worked. You know, it creates a, it's created a mass dissociation. And of course, you know, the orthodox power structures, politics and religion have been interwoven as a method to control the public. And that really got going big time after the 14th century. And it hasn't worked. Somebody said, a beautiful statement, religion is not seeking for God. Religion is participation in God. Mm. And here is God, you know, the cosmos is not elsewhere, you know. Not amazing. Even the cause of this body. It is this body. It is everybody's life, you know. It is what is. That's what is. You know, the power of the cosmos is what is. I am that, you are that. Everybody listening to that is that. And there's this beautiful, you know, ancient physical wisdom of how I participate in that through whole body moving and breathing. Mm.
Aho. I want to apply that to another quote that I saw, listened to in one of your talks, and it was about meditation.
Right.
You cannot meditate.
Yes. Yeah, that's, you know, I mentioned seeking. The meditation has been turned into a product. Even mindfulness is a product, you see. And it's a struggle in the mind to be more aware or something, or just to be awareness itself relative to all conditions, you know, to all objects. And this, like, it's kind of a lovely idea to be awareness itself. But the mind can't do that. No struggle in the mind. You know, and in fact, you're trying to meditate, you're creating a personality, you're creating a mind that's trying to meditate, right?
Right.
So, there is, of course, such a thing as meditation, but it arises naturally as a siddhi, the word. The siddhi is a natural power or a natural gift that just comes to you. And it comes to you through your yoga practice, your whole body direct intimacy with life as it actually is. That when you link the breath to the whole body, the mind automatically follows the breath. And becomes the mind becomes goes back home to its source, which is life itself. You know, and the mind becomes clear. And then meditation, what we call meditation, then just arises spontaneously and naturally and easily. And when people understand that, then they can make their yoga practice their priority, not sitting trying to meditate. This doesn't work and usually creates a kind of a dissociation from life, trying to do that.
That's incredible. I mean, that is, I think a lot of us that do work in meditation, you know, work in meditation, listen, just that word itself says it all. That we attempt, another word, uncomfortable. It can be really far more, a couple of thoughts. I mean, one, yes, I agree with you that there is a disassociation. Just by the mere fact of the trying to meditate is going to make it hard to achieve what we're trying to achieve in meditation.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'd like to say around that also is that I think it just goes to saying how meditation can be found in other forms. It doesn't have to be, again, the practice of what we consider to be, a physical yoga. It could be happening on a surfboard. It could be happening while you're gardening. It can be happening while you're brewing the perfect pot of herb tea that you've just harvested. So I think that's really important. Again, we're sharing tools here, right? We're sharing tools for people to find their truth. And this is what you're saying. I mean, the truth for somebody is very individual, very unique.
The truth is already always the case. And each individual is that truth. Each person is an utterly unique appearance of that truth. Their body, you know, their person is the appearance of reality itself, you see. And yeah, as I said before, is that if you do a little bit of yoga, 10 or 15 minutes, maybe longer, but you know, 10 minutes does a lot. Then all activity, you know, like the beautiful one, you're making a pot of herb tea. Hey, could it be coffee? Why not?
Sure,
make a pot
I
of
agree.
Coffee. You know, do the dishes, go surfing, go to work, you know, save
the
world.
I don't know about the dishes part, but I'll try.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes you have to. Go to work, save the world, get the job done, you know, save humanity, feed the people, you know, clean the planet. You know, these things have to happen, and they will happen in a sort of a smooth continuity of intimacy with life. You know, and this great thing that is meditation spontaneously arises when you do your moving and breathing that came from these wisdom traditions. See, it wasn't a struggle. Meditation is, you know, you ask people honestly, you know, and because it's sold as a product, you know, it's commodified, and so now everybody thinks they should be meditating. And usually there's a sense of failure, their inability, this damn mind, you know, that won't that won't stop its dissociation with all kinds of irrelevant worries. Like Mark Twain said, I've been worrying all my everything that I've been worrying about all my life didn't ever happen like that.
Brilliance. They come in many forms. This has all been brilliant, Mark, and I thank you so much, and invite everybody to check out your website, heartofyoga.com. Because Mark also does interviews, very, you know, incredible, a number of talks. So you can find him there. He's got a couple of different books, right? So we mentioned the book, Heart of Yoga.
I did my own book. See, I did Desika Chah's book, then I did my own book, Yoga of Heart, the reverse of those words.
Okay.
And I've got a very, you know, special one. It's God and Sex. Now We Get Both.
Yeah. Tell.
Yeah. It's deeply, you know, it reflects on the traditions of the past, you know, the ancient world, before male dominance had been invented, you know, where man and women were, of course, equal and opposite, and one empowers the other, whether it's same sex or opposite sex intimacy, you know, and this, our negativity around this matter and the vulgarity around it is, you know, a deep, deep human problem.
Yeah.
And we address this, that there must be completely life-positive participation in our own reality in all aspects of it. So I put that out, God and sex, now we get both. And just most importantly, I'd like to mention that if anybody is moved by this conversation and they want to try to see for themselves about having their own practice, then we have immersion courses. One's called Immersion into the Heart of Yoga, Personal Practice. And the other is Yoga for a Better World. And it's online. It's on heartofyoga.com. And people can start really exploring what we're talking about here, you know, in their own, you know, actual life. And this is what I'd recommend most of all.
Wonderful. I look forward to checking it out, too.
Thank you.
Mark, thank you. This has been so enlightening in so many different ways. And again, I really appreciate you kind of tapping into some history of music as we look at the history of consciousness. And so really, I appreciate you connecting that dot, as well as all the other wisdom you have. You're a man that has been on the path for oh so long, and we really appreciate you sharing.
Well, I appreciate you doing your homework, as you said. It's so lovely, and it was great meeting you at Bhakti Fest. It's a great, the Kumbh Mela of the Americas, you know, great gathering of really good people.
Yeah, I know. I miss it. I hope we'll do it again.
Yeah, me
sometime
too.
Sometime soon. Thank you again, Mark. Yeah.
All right, Bonnie. Thanks.
And for all of you, thank you for listening. Again, we're really just trying to uplift here. My name is Bonnie Burkert. I'll remind you that we have shows on Monday with Robert Hensley, The Minuteman Report. That's 3 p.m. live, 3 p.m. Pacific. And, of course, Tony Sweet, Truth Be Told, every Friday, 3 p.m. live. So be sure to check out what both of them have to speak about. I will see you with a new episode each Wednesday. Please share if you care, and until the next time, be well. Namaste.